Is Erling essential as he hauls a hat-trick again? Are we all in for Arsenal away at Old Trafford? And how are Liverpool looking ahead of the Merseyside derby? Hello again, back with you so soon. The FPL pod returning to reflect on 9 of the 10 midweek games, with this being recorded Thursday morning ahead of Leicester versus Manchester United. Sam and Julien are back with me as always, and today we are joined by the YouTuber Matt HD. Matt, good to have you on here. We see lots of chatter on your channels about FPL. Clearly, you're a big manager. How long have you been playing the game?
Hi. For about 16 years now. So back in my high school days, I was always playing before, you know, literally lessons or whichever. So yeah, I've been playing it for about 16, 17 years, 2006 season. So it's been a long time.
Okay, so you've been playing it quite a while, but how's this current season started for you?
Yeah, it's going well. I mean, I think I'm still sticking by, you know, players like Salah, Jesus is still, you know, going to be in my team for the whole season, but it's been good. I think I'm about 3.9 million for now, which is kind of halfway point. I'm okay with it. It's a bit up and down, but hopefully it's going to be a bit more consistent with Haaland as captain every single week.
Yeah, that feels like that was one of the lessons from the last couple of game weeks, doesn't it? Jules, what about you? I noticed you didn't captain Haaland despite having him.
Thank you for trolling me. Already, I mean, 61 points on paper, it's not too bad, it's decent. But I mean, I blame you too anyway for captaining.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah, well, yeah, I blame you for a lot of things. But you kind of led me into captaining Salah. You said, oh, we know you're going to captain Salah. You're going to do this. And I should have captained Haaland. I was gutted watching it. It was 2 weeks in a row now that I got the wrong captain. Matt, I've got a real problem, and it's not a problem with captaincy, but I change my mind all the time before the deadline. So I literally have everyone captain, even my mum. And then when the deadline approaches, it's like, oh, and then I go to Salah 2 weeks in a row and I'm losing like 35 points, I think, or something like that over the last two game weeks. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I need to apologize quickly to Erling Haaland and his family, his granddad, his dad, everybody, really. I will never, ever, ever this season captain anybody else but you, Erling. So this was a good lesson. This is the last time.
In the end, Sam, it didn't end up being quite as bad as it could have been for Salah captainers. You were one of them as well. Like, really, Haaland getting 17 points was huge. And we knew we'd got that hat trick quite early on. At that point, Salah had no returns. So in the end, him getting a couple of assists, I was like, we've kind of escaped as unscathed as we kind of could have, really.
Yeah, right. It was a 7-point swing in the end, which in the grand scheme of things isn't so bad, I guess. I think for me, I was, having sat here on the pod on Monday and said, right, I'm captaining Salah because I don't want to risk Haaland not starting in this game because of Pep's comments about, you know, starting Alvarez instead. Actually, on reflection, when I look back at it, maybe that was a slightly, maybe I should have made that decision differently, because the reality is, in that game, had Haaland been benched and come on for 20 minutes, I'd have still bet on him scoring in the way that City were playing. So maybe that's a good lesson for us as FPL managers, that is, even if Haaland doesn't start, he's still likely to get returns with the way that City team is set up. They're set up to send the ball through to him. And his physicality is incredible. The way he shrugged off those Nottingham Forest defenders for that first goal was just ridiculous. So maybe a bit of a lesson there. But actually, I had a really good game week in the end. I ended up on 86. So that felt like a really solid week. It halved my overall rank. So I was really, really delighted with that one.
Were you relieved when you saw Veltman starting? Because you and Jules both brought him in, and on our WhatsApp group just after we recorded the podcast last week, it kind of exploded a little bit, because both of you were like, oh my gosh, we've gone early with this transfer and now he might not feature. But he started, no need to worry.
Yeah, and that 1 point, given that Reece James was ill and didn't start, was really important, because had I not done Veltman in, I'd have ended up with Nico Williams off my bench, who had got -1. So actually, that's a 2-point swing, which in the grand scheme of things isn't a lot. But actually, you know, it's still not great, is it, to get a -1 transfer off your bench? So I was pleased with the Veltman one. And you know what? He's in for the nice game weeks that Brighton have coming up now. Yeah. So yeah, pleased to have him now. He's back and fit again.
A thought at this point for last week's pod guest, Nadim Anua, he did bring in Lewis Dunk. And of course, we saw what happened with Lewis Dunk. I texted him to say, how's the wildcard gone? And he replied saying he was thinking of contacting the FPL, see if he can have another wildcard to replace the one he's just taken. I sort of didn't think there was really any point, but I think that sums up how it went overall for him. Sam, quickly, before we move on, you teased a possible game week 6 wildcard. Any update? Is it active?
It's not yet because it's really hard, isn't it? I look at my team, I really want to wild card. I want to get rid of Salah. And actually at half time in that Liverpool game, I was like, right, that's it. I've had enough. Salah out, Kane in, full on wild card. And then on 97 minutes, Salah gets his second assist and I'm suddenly back thinking, can I really take out the Egyptian king? I don't know. So I'm kind of umming and ahhing still. But actually, with the way that my team played, my other transfer last week was Aronson in and I probably have to take him out. And I thought he was really good. Yeah. So it's a tough one, I think. And so now I'm kind of backwards and forwards. I might just see if I can get away with getting Kane in another way without hitting the wildcard button.
Okay, well, let's look ahead to game week 6. I think it's fair to say, isn't it, Matt, that rotation didn't hit us quite as hard as we expected it to in the midweek fixtures. We were all braced, as I said, for Erling Haaland not to play. Are you concerned that this weekend, potentially, Haaland could be a doubt or maybe other managers will have to make a few changes?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think with how well Alvarez played for City, scoring 2 goals as well, like he could lead the front line with maybe a different striker to Haaland. But I mean, I actually took out De Bruyne of my fantasy team and I thought for one point, is that a terrible idea? But I think I'm just hoping Haaland plays every single week, but City, you know, lose as well. That'd be brilliant. and he scores like 5 goals and we all have him as captain, maybe triple captain. But yeah, I think Alvarez could be a concern because he looks the real deal as well. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, it's hard to predict. No one knows.
Yeah, you know when like Spurs, for example, have brought in a backup before Jules for Harry Kane? They've never been anywhere near as good, no offence to Harry Kane. So Harry Kane has continued to play. It did look like Alvarez is the real deal and they're not going to be any weaker really when Haaland isn't playing. Well, obviously a little bit, but they're not going to significantly be weakened. So he could actually get quite a lot of minutes.
Maybe, although I think Alvarez was so good against Nottingham Forest because of Haaland as well. And he played wide. He didn't play as a centre forward.
Right,
and
yeah.
And maybe as a centre forward on his own up front, it would be different. I just think, and I might be wrong, and he might be benched at the weekend, Haaland. I just think that when you have a striker in that kind of form, and yeah, of course, then they play Sevilla in the Champions League, so they will play every 3 days now until the international break. But one thing, the international break is actually coming soon. There's only three game weeks before the international break where he will get some rest. I think when he's in that kind of form, why bench him? You want him to score the most goals possible, even if he just plays 60 minutes or 69 minutes like he did against Nottingham Forest, and then you take him out for the last half hour, that's fine. That's a good rest too. So I think strikers work in streaks so much that I think Pep is thinking like, okay, I want to rest him, but I really can't rest him. Like, I don't want to stop his rhythm. Imagine you bench him and he only plays 15 minutes, nothing happens. I don't know, it would be very different. So this is me also convincing myself and all the owners of Erling Haaland that he's going to play every game, start every game.
I was going to say, I really hope that Pep's got exactly the same thinking as Julian Laurent.
He's listening
not something
as well,
that
Pep,
I actually think is likely. Yeah, of course he is.
let's look. FPL's more important.
Fair point. Completely fair point. That's what we all think on this podcast, at least. The beauty of the midweek round does mean that we've got even more information in a short period of time on our players because we've had a couple of game weeks in less than a week. So let's just reflect on where we're at with other players alongside Haaland. Let's start with the players who disappointed us. Firstly, the Chelsea defence. Sam, you alluded to it. Reece James missing out with illness. And then, of course, Chelsea losing once again. Obviously, it was disappointing for Reece James owners. But on the flip side of that, did we see his importance? And do you think as soon as he is available, Tuchel is going to get him in? They can't wait to have him back in that side.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he was ill this week, which as a Reece James owner was incredibly frustrating because I was looking at that fixture against Southampton thinking, if there's not a clean sheet, there should at least be some attacking returns from him. But the Chelsea defence have looked all over the place for a couple of weeks now. They've not been solid at the back. And Reece James has been playing in that kind of centre-back position, which hasn't been great for us in FPL. Having said all of that, they did sign Wesley Fofana finally. The long-winded Wesley Fofana transfer saga has concluded. So now we've got a proper back line potentially for Chelsea, which hopefully means Reece James moves out into his preferred wing-back position. Well, my preferred Reece James position anyway. That's where I want him. So I'm hopeful that actually that means moving forward, Chelsea defensively will be more solid. Now they've got Koulibaly and Fofana adding to kind of that back line. But it is difficult. I mean, I think if you're a Mendy owner, I'd be looking to get rid of him right now because he's making mistakes. They're not keeping clean sheets. And with the likes of Reece James, Cucurella, if you've gone for him, you can get that attacking threat out of them and you can kind of top up the points even if the clean sheet is lost. But you just don't have that with Mendy. And at a time when you're getting clean sheets from your other premium goalkeepers, maybe a move on him is the right thing to do.
What are you thinking of doing with him, Matt? I notice you've got him in your team. Are you just going to be holding?
It's a tricky one because I don't think a lot of FPL owners knew if he was actually going to be starting prior to the game. However, I did see a lot of tweets saying, you know, he's not been seen on any of the training photos for Chelsea. So that's always a bit of a, I guess, good tip to see if a player might or might not be playing. But I think going forward, yeah, if he's playing centre-back before, you know, Fofana gets fully into the team, then I am tempted to take him out. He's only got, I think, one clean sheet so far this season with, I think, a goal and an assist. So I think potentially I could get rid, but I'm not sure who I'd replace him with. I mean, who do you guys think to replace him with?
So just one quick thing on Fofana. 4.4 million for Fofana, only owned by 1.7% of the players. I think you don't have to bring him in straight away, but I think he's definitely someone who will improve the defence. I think seeing the comments that Tuchel made after the game about softness and we see that as a team they didn't defend well, not enough effort. You can just imagine that a lot of the things they're going to work at training now between, well, there's not much training to do because they play so often, but that they will focus a lot on, okay, show me that you can be aggressive again. Show me that you can defend as a team again. All the things that usually we've seen under Tuchel since he arrived, really. So I think that could be very different. And Fofana then comes in straight into that back line. I think we make a big difference. And at 4.4, with a huge differential, I think he's one to definitely keep in mind. Then I think you've got other options, Matt, for defenders. We talked about Brighton defenders and we brought Veltman in. This is, I think, a good idea. I know they didn't keep a clean sheet, but I think someone like Joachim Anderson, depending on your budget at Palace, but Palace defensively have looked quite strong so far this season, even if they've conceded a goal on Tuesday night. So there are a few options, but James is royalty in the game, really. There's not many that are as talented as him, to be fair.
I think the thing is with the Chelsea defence, if you have Reece James, I'd keep him because of the attacking threat he brings. But if you've got any of the others, I would be tempted to move them on. And like Jules says, I think there's a number of players down in that kind of 4 to 5 million bracket that are offering really nice value for money right now. And investing in Brighton, even freeing up some budget and maybe looking at going for Nico Williams or Nathan Patterson so you can move some of that money to the rest of the team might be a good idea. And I think for me, though, Reece James continues to be just a hold until we see how Fofana fits into that team. If Fofana comes in and plays really well, then a downgrade from Reece James to Fofana, which isn't really a downgrade when it comes to, you know, actual talent, it's just a downgrade when it comes to FPL budget, could be a way to go that gives you more money for the rest of your team.
I panicked upon seeing the news that Reece James was likely to miss out when all the rumours were circulating. And I thought, which player am I going to bring in? Someone that we've talked about on the pod that I've been advised to bring in. I bought in Saliba. Thanks, Jules. Yeah. 1 point.
But it was amazing.
That's what happens when I follow your advice.
I know. I mean, Arsenal need to stop shooting themselves in the foot like they've done now two games in a row against Fulham because they... That goal they should have never conceded after the mistake by Gabriel. And against Villa, that direct corner, really? Are you kidding me? And Rabzeli is my goalkeeper. So I'll have a word with the Arsenal defence to make sure that they're more solid than what we saw the last two games.
Yeah, 1 point from him. That is the last time I listened to you, Julian. Okay. Another transfer I nearly made, but didn't because of Jules, actually, because he's gone on about Rodrigo. He's actually sung, Matt, on this podcast about Rodrigo before. On a serious note, I know he's been a brilliant asset, but I did resist bringing him in. I was actually relieved, of course, because he did go off in the first half against Everton. You've got him. I imagine you'll be keeping a close eye on what Jesse Marsh says about him this week.
Yeah, definitely. I think he's been one of my, I guess, surprise brilliant signings so far. I think I got him in the second game week or third game week. And I think he's got, 28 points in two game weeks at 1 point. So he has been fantastic. And I think he's one of those players that, when he's done that well, you just want to be loyal to him in your FPL team. So I'm hoping he'll be fully fit for next week. But it's tough. There's not many, for me, amazing midfielders in that price range. And he's one of them who I've loved. So I think I'll keep hold of him for now, but I'll have to keep tabs on that.
So I had the Leeds Everton game on one screen watching it, and he clearly popped his shoulder out, right? And I'm shouting at the television, put it back in. I thought you could just easily put the, like you do with your finger or something. I was like, come on, it's nothing.
Dr. Jules.
I know.
So easy.
I was thinking like, I can't have him out with 1 point after 32 minutes. Come on. I said to the doctor, put his shoulder back in. Come on, pop it in back. They obviously didn't do that. He looked in a lot of pain. So I'm sorry, Rodrigo, again. But yeah, like Matt, I hope he's fit because, like we said, they create a lot. We saw that even against Everton. My only worry is that now Bamford is back, it's easy for Jesse Marsh to say, okay, I can give the weekend a rest for Rodrigo because I've got other options now and I can play with still a very decent team. So I fear that even if he could kind of be playing, that they don't want to take the risk.
I mean, I think there's been a few players that have been disappointing, haven't there, across the last couple of game weeks. Obviously, you know, Rodriguez is slightly different because he injured himself and therefore went off. But Jack Harrison's the same. He blanked in the last couple. He went from a goal involvement of 75% in game weeks 1 to 3 to just nothing in the last couple of game weeks, which I think if you brought him in, you'll find disappointing. And then if you look across at Brentford, there's Ivan Toney. Now, he was in phenomenal form in those first 3 game weeks of the season. He's now blanked in the last 2. And when you look at the underlying stats for him, it's not even like he's been close to scoring in these last couple of game weeks. He's gone from an expected goals of 1.41 in game weeks 1 to 3 to an expected goals of 0.49 in game weeks 4 and 5. So what we're starting to see is maybe purple patches ending for some players. And, you know, when we talk about purple patches, we're talking about runs of really good form where we want to invest. And we had some of those in the opening weeks of the season. Now, maybe what we are seeing is Ivan Toney and Mitrovic, the conversation isn't quite so intense anymore, because at the beginning it was very much like, do I go Mitro, do I go Toney? And you could kind of go either way on it. Now it's very much, I should be on Mitrovic. And if you run Ivan Toney owner, I think it probably makes for an easy move across.
A quick word on Mo Salah, because we alluded to the fact we captained him. We expected a response. We did get those couple of assists. Do we still just have to hold on, Matt, because the fear of not having him is too great? That's what it feels like for me at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. He's playing well, and that's the frustrating part. I think his stats are actually similar to previous seasons in terms of dribble success rate and other things. But he's one of those players that you just have to have in your team. He will get those goals shortly. He's too good not to. And Liverpool haven't even really got going into full gear yet. So once we get going into that normal high level that we're at, I think he will start to repay the lost game weeks that everyone has been crying over.
Is he still essential, Sam? Or do you think this is changing now?
I think it's changing. I mean, I think what we've seen is the beginning of last season, Mo Salah was in the form of his career. Like when he started the 21-22 season, he was like an Egyptian possessed, really, wasn't he? He was just banging in goals for fun. Everything he touched turned to gold. Then he went off to the African Cup of Nations, came back and he just wasn't quite the same player. Now, he wasn't a bad asset, but he wasn't returning with the same level of thrust. And throughout the whole of 2022, we've not really seen Mo Salah hit that elite form that we were seeing this time last year. So, well, what does that mean for us in FPL? Well, at 13 million, you do have to question whether it's worth owning him, because on the flip side, you've got players like Luis Diaz, Roberto Firmino. Now, Firmino's a little bit difficult because of the Nunez thing, but you've got other players at Liverpool who are looking more consistent or look just as likely, if anything, to return, but they're like much, much cheaper than Salah. So for the first time in a long time, I'm starting to feel that Salah is really not essential anymore, and that moving him on for a big, heavy hitting front three might actually not be the worst idea I've ever heard.
Talking of that heavy front three, we've already spoken about him. Haaland, we clearly all have him. We're clearly not doing anything with him at the moment other than captaining him week in, week out. Jules, is he rapidly overtaking Salah as the essential player in the game?
Yeah, 100%. There's no doubt. Of course, there's rotation worries, if you want, because like we said, it's Pep Roulette and there's a potential risk that he will bench him at some point because, like we said, with the Champions League, they will play every 3 days now for the next few weeks. But he's so incredible. And I think he was unlucky to only score 3 goals on Wednesday night like he was at the weekend. He could easily have had 5 in both games. This is how crazy he is and how good he is in a team that right now is is super dominant. I mean, at some point, they had 97% of the ball against Forest. 97! I didn't even think that the stats could count that high. So it's crazy. And I think, yeah, you should have him. And I agree with Sam. I think for Mo Salah, 0.15 expected goals against Newcastle. It was a tough game. He created chances, yes. He got those two assists. And the second one, how does he get involved in the air on that corner twice in the space of 2 seconds on the Carvalho goal? I don't know. But they're not playing well. That's what worries me, is that Liverpool are not playing well at all. And we saw that against Newcastle. And then they've got Everton, Wolves, which is always tricky. And then Chelsea away. So the next three league games for Liverpool are really tough.
Are you thinking of selling him? I can hear your voice wavering a little
blasphemy.
Bit. I'm wondering if you're considering
it. Isn't an insult, I think you're saying.
Well, no, it's just what you're saying about the form. I just wondered if maybe you were wavering a little bit.
I think it's... I think every manager should ask himself or herself the question. That's fine. But I would not sell Salah.
The thing is, if you haven't wildcarded yet, you could afford to sell Salah, knowing that on wildcard, you can just get him back in if it all goes horribly wrong. And that's where I am at the moment. I'm kind of in that moment of thinking, could I take a risk not having Salah against Everton at the weekend, which is the 12:30 kickoff, and we all know I hate those, or do I just stick with him? And I think that there is definitely a moment where you go, actually, maybe I invest more heavily in my forward line, I take the money, I don't have Salah, I have Luis Diaz instead. And if it's all a big mistake, and if I suddenly realise that actually it is really important that I still have Salah in my team, then I just wildcard and get him back in.
Oh, I still just can't bring myself to do it. I can see the logic, but it for me, it's just difficult. Not having... Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Just at this time when we're trying to squeeze in Jesus, Haaland, maybe Harry Kane, and still have Salah, the last thing we actually need, isn't it, is another premium midfielder coming into form. Step forward, Raheem Sterling, Matt. Is he coming onto our radar now? So is he giving us another headache?
Yeah, I think he is, because I just signed Luis Diaz to my FPL team and I was happy-ish with that transfer. But seeing how he's become Chelsea's most important player right now in attack, I think it's hard to ignore. I mean, he's got a lot of points, hasn't he, recently? A lot. So yeah, you can't ignore it. I think he's a great shout right now.
We're saying we can't ignore it, Jules. What will we need to see from him to actually bring him in? Because I'm seeing people talk about him and we're saying, brilliant, back-to-back returns after three blanks. But I'm not seeing too many people actually bringing him in.
No, you're right. I think it's a fascinating one, because he played really well against Southampton in patches during that game. I was not completely sold, to be honest with you, at the start of the season, of him playing centrally like that, whether he plays as a two with Havertz or, as we saw against Southampton, on his own in a 4-3-3 formation. But to have that kind of freedom, especially on his own up front, I think that worked much better for him than... I know he scored 2 goals the game week before, but I think this is better for him. However, I still think it could be even better, because I'm not sure Havertz is right on that left-hand side. I don't think Ziyech did much on the right-hand side either. So if you even put him with better players around him, I think that could get better. I'm very sceptical again about Chelsea going forwards. I can understand the reservation and the criticism that Tuchel had for the team. But Raheem seems to be high on confidence right now. It's just, I'm not sure how often the service will come. I think Mount is not playing great. We said that about Havertz. I don't know where the creativity is going to come. So I would wait personally a little bit more to see, for example, who comes for the last day of the transfer window, if they sign Aubameyang, if they sign another striker, if they sign a creative player, who they go for, and then maybe reassess after the weekend.
I mean, I totally agree, actually, Jules, because game weeks 1 to 3, Sterling had an attempt every 42.7 minutes. Game weeks 4 and 5, he had an attempt every 32.6. So that's a significant amount of difference in terms of the number of chances that he's getting per game, the amount of goal attempts that he's having over the course of those games. But what we aren't seeing from Chelsea yet is any consistency. So sometimes I watch them, like against Spurs, and they were absolutely excellent. Like, they played that game so well. And then I watch them in other games, like against Southampton this week, and it's like, what's happened to Chelsea? What's happened to that free-flowing attacking Chelsea team? Now, okay, they were missing Reece James in that one, which will have an impact. But Sterling definitely was the leading light for Chelsea in that game. Now, if they sign somebody to play up front before that window ends, then I think Sterling becomes a massively attractive differential for our FPL teams. Whether you can afford to bring him in at 9.9 million is another matter, because you're probably going to have to move some budget around. But if they do sign a proper forward and a good one, then I think that there's real scope with Raheem Sterling. It's just whether Chelsea have that attacking prowess after the window closes.
Looking at a few of the other players that had good game weeks, if we're going to talk about in-form forwards and midfielders, we have to talk about Anthony Gordon, don't we? Back-to-back returns after three blanks. Very much looks like Everton's main man. Still an Everton player. Frank Lampard said he's going to remain at the club. Would he be someone you'd be looking at all, Matt?
It's hard as a Liverpool fan, because FPL, you can be biased sometimes. But yeah, I mean, potentially, I just don't think he's been... I mean, other than the last 2 weeks, he hasn't been consistent. He had, I think, four games without doing a lot. But if he's good, I mean, he's good value, isn't he? So he could be a potential shout. If you have like an expensive midfielder and want to get someone cheaper in, you could save a lot on, you know, having Salah or De Bruyne. But it's hard. If he starts scoring in the next game or two, then yeah, I think I would maybe have to look into that.
Yeah, he's just 5.5 million, selected by less than 2% of managers. Though the next couple of fixtures, Liverpool and then Arsenal. So not exactly the easiest. Though maybe when Mopay comes in, it'll affect and improve that Everton attack. They've not really had a recognised striker recently. What about Roberto Firmino? I mentioned there the Merseyside derby this weekend, Sam. We know that Nunes is going to be back available again, but Jurgen Klopp can't drop Bobby Firmino in this form, can he?
I mean, if I was Klopp, I definitely wouldn't be dropping Roberto Firmino in this form. I mean, Bobby has literally come back into the team on absolute flames right now, and he's the leading light, isn't he, there? He was obviously fantastic against Bournemouth, but he was also brilliant in the game against Newcastle. He was the one that's kind of made the difference. And we've seen Liverpool playing maybe more in their old system that they're used to playing, when they used to have Bobby and Mane and Salah playing up top, and having Firmino and Salah back together again with Luis Diaz out there too. It seems a bit more familiar. Now, with Nunez, he offers that slightly more aggressive attacking play, slightly more physical part to his game, doesn't drop as deep. When Nunez plays, he does affect Luis Diaz. Luis Diaz tends to be the deeper one, which for me as a Diaz owner isn't something I enjoy. So I'm really hoping that Klopp stays loyal to Firmino and rewards him for the service that he's put in over the last couple of game weeks, because, you know, back-to-back returns for Firmino now, I just don't think he can put Nunez straight back in.
Let's talk a little bit more about the fixtures for this weekend then, and start things by talking about that 12:30 game. As you said, Sam, it's Everton taking on Liverpool. We've already discussed Mo Salah. Jules, quickly, if you are going to sell him, surely you have to keep him for the Merseyside derby, given the way Everton are conceding and given the fact that he gets himself up for this big game.
Yeah, I think you have to this weekend, because as we've been saying as well, Darwin is back. I don't think he will start. I agree with Sam. I think Firmino will start, and it would be crazy to go and put Darwin straight from kickoff in a game like that after not playing for the last three game weeks, considering the pressure and, you know, what Conor Cody or Tarkovsky could do to try to wind up Darwin Nunez again, for example. So Firmino will start. But the good thing about Darwin being back is that you can bring him on for the last half hour, and he brings you all that physicality that helps Mo Salah, I think, and that he kind of needs, because right now, as we've been saying, he's still a bit short of confidence. He's short maybe of that kind of energy. I thought he lacked a bit of energy against Newcastle, like a lot of the team, to be fair. So yeah, I don't think you could take the risk of not being with Mo Salah for a Merseyside derby like that. And by the way, I brought in Harvey Elliott for this week. I was very happy. I thought he had a great game, because, you know, I'm a bit short money because I've got all the superstars in my team, because I'm a superstar guy, of course. But I was very happy with Elliott, and I think he's going to start against Everton, and he got himself in really good positions against Newcastle. I think he was a bit unlucky not to return. Certainly in that second half, he was Liverpool's best player. So I'm really chuffed that I brought him in.
5 million for Harvey Elliott. As a Liverpool fan, Matt, is he, I imagine you really like him at the moment, you're really impressed with him.
Great guy.
But as an FPL asset as well, is he someone that you think is going to come on our radar?
Yeah, it's tricky, because sometimes it's hard to see what position he's exactly playing in. It's kind of like a centre mid, you know, free-flowing role. I think I'd say Elliott, and also Carvalho is getting some more game time. And with that last-minute goal, you know, the other night, it's hard to ignore. But I think Elliott, it's an interesting one. He's playing really well, even in games that we've, you know, lost this season and not, you know, played at our best. He's been actually one of the shining lights. So I think more and more people are going to sign him in FPL, and I wouldn't be surprised at that value in our team, and he's starting games. Why not?
Yeah, why not? 5 million, definitely one to keep an eye on if you've still got that third Liverpool spot, and that's one of your cheap midfielders, isn't it? Sam, what about the defence? I feel like we're having a weekly check-in on how Jurgen Klopp's defence are doing, and other than last week against Bournemouth, the verdict hasn't been great.
No, and actually it's really difficult because we're not talking about 5 million pound defenders here. We're talking about the most premium of premium defenders in Trent Alexander-Arnold, in Andy Robertson, and even in Van Dijk. He still takes that premium price tag. So it is becoming a bit of a struggle, I've got to be honest. I think the Bournemouth game gave Trent Alexander-Arnold a bit of breathing space. It gave me the time to kind of go, okay, we're going to start to see Liverpool playing in their free-flowing football again. We're going to start to see this attacking threat from Trent again. I actually thought that he was pretty poor against Newcastle. He was pretty ineffective going forward. And it's a tough one because I look at him and I don't think I'm going to do anything ahead of the Everton game when it comes to my Liverpool defence. But I'm not really loving them right now. So I can see a time where we go, actually, when we've got really good fixtures for a number of clubs that are cheaper to buy and we've got other assets that are performing well. You know, I look across at Spurs and Perisic and think, okay, well, you didn't have the best game against West Ham, but you were still really attacking and the underlying stats were still really good. No returns, but significantly cheaper in terms of budget than having, say, Trent Alexander-Arnold or Robertson. So they're going to get the Everton game for me, but I think we do need to be looking carefully at that Liverpool defence and trying to work out whether it's money well spent from our budget for just returns every now and then rather than the every week returns that we're used to from our Liverpool defence.
Yeah, I got lured into Trent Alexander-Arnold again last week when he scored that goal, when he got the clean sheet. It was like, oh, here we go again. This is why we've all spent that money on Trent. Yeah. And then they conceded first against Newcastle and he didn't get any returns again. Anyway, I feel like I need to get that off my chest. Moving on to another game. There's some huge games this weekend. Manchester United against Arsenal. We've kind of all spoken about Gabriel Jesus already in this podcast, but we've not spoken about him in depth. We've just spoken about him as if to say, yeah, we've got him. Yeah, we have to have him. Is he in the essential category as well, would you say, Matt, now, given the fact that his ownership is over 80%? It's crazy.
Is that a record? Because it must be, surely.
Yeah,
he's got 3 goals and 3 assists. And I like him going to Old Trafford and potentially getting a goal or assist again. I think he's, as you say, just so highly selected. He's one of those players that you just can't not have. If you take him out and he does well, you're really going to be kicking yourself in FPL all week. So I think he's still potential captain opportunity if you don't have Haaland. But yeah, I think he's just a quality player and probably one of Arsenal's best. And I think he's a good choice. I'm definitely going to hold on to him for the next few weeks and see how he does.
This is, Jules, isn't it, Arsenal's biggest test of the season so far, would you say? I know Manchester United haven't been in brilliant form, but they've found their feet now under Erik ten Hag. Is this where we learn a lot more about them, do you think?
Yes, I think so, definitely. First big test. There will be Spurs coming 2 weeks, like, two game weeks after, and that would be another one because so far it's 5 wins in 5. But you can say that they haven't really played anyone that could really test them. This is the case with United. Even if it's a United team that hasn't been really great so far this season, it's still a bigger test away from home as well. So we will have to see. It was good to see Bukayo Saka with an assist on that winning goal from Martinelli because I think he needed something like that to really kickstart his season. He got himself in good position so far, but there was something lacking. I think this would give him a boost. And then it's almost you pick who you want, Jesus, Martinelli, Saka, Odegaard potentially can all return. Defensively, we said they've been strong apart from those little silly mistakes against Villa and against Fulham. But overall, they defend well. So it'd be different against United for sure. But they're so high on confidence that I think they're going to go there not fearing that trip at all.
Lots of managers, Sam, will be tripled up on Arsenal going into this one. Do you play all three?
It's a tough one, isn't it? And I think maybe we get an understanding of that after we watch the Manchester United and Leicester game on Thursday evening. Because if Manchester United perform how they did in game week 3 against Liverpool, then you're probably thinking, well, maybe I bench my my Arsenal defender. But actually, if they perform in the way that they have in the other games that they've played so far this season, then maybe you want to play Saliba. Saliba has attacking threat. You know, maybe if you've got Ben White, you bench because there's less attacking threat. But with Saliba, you do have the opportunity for goals and assists from him. So I think it's tough. But I think if you're investing in Arsenal and you're buying into the fact that this form is not temporary, it's a permanent factor, and they're going to have and continue to have a great start to the season, then I think you play them all. The one caveat is maybe Ødegaard, because he did get a knock in that game and went off. So let's just keep an eye on what Arteta has to say about Ødegaard going into the weekend's action, because he is their captain. He's very important and he's made such a difference to the way that Arsenal have been so far this season. So I think all Arsenal fans and players and FPL managers who own Arsenal players alike will be hoping that Ødegaard makes it, because they don't look quite as good when Ødegaard isn't there.
What about from a Manchester United point of view, Matt? I'm aware that asking a Liverpool fan this isn't my wisest move as a podcast presenter, but I know you'll be an unbiased FPL manager and guest. As Sam said, at the time of recording, we haven't seen Manchester United tonight. But if you did own Manchester United players, how much optimism would you be going into this game with of them returning?
I feel like this game could be a draw. You know, I just think it's tough that they've been so inconsistent, you know, losing 4-0 to Brentford, then beating Liverpool, which is horrible to mention. But, you know, their highest points I've seen now on FPL is that Rashford's got the most points at 16 points, which is not, you know, a hell of a lot of points. They've got players like Rashford and Sancho who've got 5.3% selection by team managers. So I don't think people are that high on United players right now. They're not really on their radar until they show some consistency. But it's hard. You just never know the Premier League. They might win this game like 4-2. They might lose 4-2. You never know. But yeah, I just don't think they're consistent enough yet compared to years gone by when you'd always have like a Robin van Persie or Rooney or Ronaldo. But yeah, it's hard to judge them right now.
Yeah, it's hard to judge them, but they have had a better couple of games, Jules. Is anyone on your radar vaguely? I know you had Anthony Martial in pre-season when he came back off the bench the other week. You were saying you were keeping tabs on him, got injured again. So I'm guessing you're not going to go there for quite a while. But anyone else that you'd maybe be looking at or you're keeping tabs on?
The one is Anthony, really, because he's so exciting. Because, I think he would have to work on a few things, like attack the space a bit more than he used to do at Ajax. It's a very different league, of course, than the Eredivisie, but he's so good on the ball. He's so talented. I think there's so much potential there that he's a player that we need to keep an eye on, because if he clicks, and obviously being reunited with Ten Hag could help for that, but if he clicks and settles well at United, I think Anthony can potentially be a really good asset for them and for us in the game too. So Anthony is the one for me, really. Then defensively, you can look at Varane and Lisandro Martinez. You can look at Diogo Dalot, who had a really, obviously, good last couple of games and the assist against Southampton, I think it was. So, you know, we will have to see about that. And Malacia on the other side. But for me, Anthony is the one to keep an eye on. I won't bring any United players right now, but Anthony excites me a lot.
I feel like at this point I should also disclaim that I am still one of the just over 6% of managers that does hold Marcus Rashford. I keep going to sell him.
No, keep him.
As I
keep
said
him.
The other
it's
week.
It's good for you. It's good for your team.
Yeah, you're saying that because you want to try and get above me. But I kept him because, on a serious note, I kept him because I was so impressed with him against Liverpool. And then I had other fires and other things to do. And then I went to sell him this week and I thought, I can't do that when he's facing this Leicester defence as they've been so far this season. But ahead of Arsenal, Sam, do I finally have to part ways with him?
Well, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because if Marcus Rashford goes and scores tonight against Leicester, you're going to find it really difficult to sell him ahead of the games that he's got coming up. So, all right, they've got Arsenal at the weekend. After that, they've got Crystal Palace. That's not an easy game. That'll be a tough defence for them to break down. And then after that, it's Leeds, then Manchester City, Everton, Newcastle, and then Spurs. They're not the best run of fixtures, but also they're not the worst run of fixtures. And at Marcus Rashford's price point, with injuries potentially to Rodrigo, with other players that we were talking about earlier, like Harrison, who maybe aren't in the form that they were in a couple of game weeks ago, if we start to see some consistency, you know, Manchester United, like the guys have mentioned, they've been doing good things in the transfer market. They've signed some good players. So I think you see how they get on tonight and then you make a decision. But I don't think I'd be prioritising to bring in any United players until we see how they fit and how they work together. But also, I don't think I'd be prioritising Rashford as a transfer out. I think you're probably going to have other things that are more of a priority to fix than Rashford.
Okay, well, let's end on transfers because managers once again acting quickly because of the quick turnaround at deadline, of course, 11 a.m. on Saturday. Unsurprisingly, the most transferred in player, yep, Erling Haaland. Once again, everyone's realising they really do need him. Then Pascal Gross, then Wilf Zaha, of course, back fit and scoring for Crystal Palace. The most transferred out, Rodrigo, James, Tony and Zinchenko. Three of those four, of course, who have been missing due to injury. But guys, I want to know what transfers you've been doing. So come on then, Jules, which moves have you made?
So none at the moment. And I think I might roll on my transfers to have two for the following game week because I'm happy with the team unless the news is bad for Reece James or for Rodrigo in the sense that Rodrigo will be out for 6 months for that tiny, tiny shoulder injury. I'm only kidding. And for James, that the illness is still there and then maybe I need to do something. But apart from that, I'm happy. I'm happy with the team. I'm happy with who my players are facing. And I like the fact that you can roll on your transfers and have two free transfers for the following game.
Yeah, you say that. I made my two free transfers last week and they got a combined total of 2 points between them. So don't get too excited on that.
Yeah,
Matt, what about you? I'd like to point out that I did Ward to Sanchez long term or in the next few game weeks.
Smart.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah, okay, long term.
And then I got rid of Reece James for Saliba. And again, I thought that was a really smart move.
Yeah, long term again.
Yeah.
Long term is great because, exactly. You know, if it doesn't work out straight away, you say, yeah, long term.
You can say, well, it doesn't matter. He's going to make it up next week. It's fine. Matt, what about you? What are your transfers?
So last week I took out Zinchenko for Perisic because he's been, you know, brilliant recently for Spurs. Didn't pay off this week, but I think really, realistically this week, I'm probably going to hold out for Reece James to continue to, well, return and play. I think hopefully he'll return for Chelsea. But if he, you know, is still out for another few weeks, then I think I'll probably take Jules' recommendation for Fofana. I love that idea of having, you know, 4.4 million
Thank you very much, my friend.
Team. So yeah, I appreciate it. But yeah, hopefully maybe not a transfer because I want more free transfers, right? But we'll see how it goes.
Sam, your transfers. I really want you to reveal at this point you are wildcarding.
I'm so torn, Kelly, between full on wildcarding, rolling my transfer and just selling Salah. Like it's as far across the spectrum as I can go, that is where I am this week. Like I look at my team, I quite like it. The Reece James factor is playing a part if he is back. And, you know, he was ill, so he should be back, hopefully, for the weekend. Then obviously I'll hold him. If he's not back, then a move to another defender feels like it might be on the cards there. I would really like to have Harry Kane for this weekend. I am, for the first time this season, off to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. And I don't yet have a Spurs player that I can captain. And, you know, my rule of life, Kelly, is that if I'm watching a match, I have to captain someone from it. And I don't have anyone to captain. So I am at that point where, do I go Luis Diaz to Kulusevski? Yes, I could do that, but I quite like Luis Diaz for this game against Everton. So I'm all over the place, basically, is the answer. And probably as a result of that, normally when I get to this headspace, I just go, right, I'm rolling. Because at that point, if I can't make a decision, I always think the best thing to do is to just do nothing. So I'll be waiting on the press conferences, seeing what Tuchel's got to say, and then making my decision from there. But Reece James is probably quite pivotal in what happens with the rest of my team this week.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the same for a lot of managers. And I know what's going to happen. He's going to line up for Chelsea at the weekend and I'm really going to regret selling him for Saliba for that wonderful 1 point that I got in midweek. Captaincy, surely.
Long term, just think going... long term, long term.
Thanks, Jules. Long term. Captaincy, anyway, surely we're all going Erling Haaland. We all learned our lesson last week, right, Sam?
Yes.
Oh, you don't tell me you're going to bring in a Spurs player and captain them.
Oh, she's not sure.
Well, wow. if So that is my FPL rule. So if a Spurs player makes their way into my team, I will have to captain them for the game because that is my rule. So if Harry Kane finds his way into my team before Saturday's deadline, then he will be my captain. If he doesn't and there is no Spurs player in my team, then I would go Haaland. And for the general FPL fans out there, I think Haaland is the best captain this week. There is a slight chance that he gets benched, but he did come off early in the game against Nottingham Forest. So he's had a bit of a rest already. I think Aston Villa defensively have been really shaky so far this season, and Haaland will just absolutely run rings around them, I think. So he is the obvious choice. I don't know that you'd want to go for Jesus. Well, I wouldn't anyway. Salah's the only other one that I would consider. He's actually got a really, really good record against Everton. He has returned 3 goals, 1 assist, and 3 bonus points in the last 4 matches against them in the league and averages 7.5 points per match against his Merseyside rivals. So he could be a nice option, but the form isn't quite there. I don't quite trust him yet. So yeah, it's Haaland, I think.
Matt, are you going Haaland as well?
Yeah, I think most people are going to go with Haaland. And yeah, I just can't ignore Aston Villa have not been good at all this season. They're looking so vulnerable in defence. And yeah, I think he'll pick them apart. That's if he plays. But I agree with Sam. I think, you know, he only played, was it 68 minutes? He could have scored more goals and he's got that rest in already. So I just hope that Guardiola is not as secretive this week with his press conferences.
He always is.
That's going to cause mayhem. So yeah, hopefully not, but we'll see. It's got to be him though. I think he's the obvious choice. I'd say Salah's a good choice as well. Potentially Jesus for me, but Haaland is, he's number one.
Do we have a full house of Haaland captainers, Jules?
Well, Jules is going to change his mind anyway, regardless.
True.
Nah, I've sworn that I would captain Haaland now between now and the end of the season. But watch him being on the bench and come on for 20 minutes with 1 point while Salah scored a hat-trick against Everton. Watch it, Jules.
It only took him, what was it, 26, 27 minutes last night to score a hat-trick? He scores quick hat-tricks, even if he's coming off the bench on 70 minutes. Yeah, I'd back him for returns. Maybe this again is
Thank you for reassuring.
Maybe this is again me projecting these positive thoughts in the hope that even if he is benched, we're still going to get points. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. An early start after a busy midweek of action. Matt, thank you for coming along. If listeners or people that are maybe viewing the videos from these want to follow you or check out more of your stuff, where can they find you?
I'm on YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. Matt HGame is the name. And yeah, every platform you can think of, really.
Brilliant. Well, good luck this week in FPL and the rest of the season as well. And of course, kind of good luck to you, Sam and Jules as well. But I don't like it when you beat me by too much. A reminder, your deadline is 11 o'clock on Saturday. You know the drill by now. It's fantasy.premierleague.com to manage your team and for lots of other brilliant FPL content. A reminder too, the Off the Bench podcast will be back next week on Monday, rounding up the game week. So do check that out. And don't forget then to check in with us on Thursday. Bye-bye. We'll